Welcome to ATS Mix.
I think until you start asking questions, you know, you're just going to buy whatever's offered to you on the 6 o'clock news.
ATS Mix.
This isn't a talk show, it's a freak show.
From AboveTopSecret.com.
I'd also be skeptical of the people who are out there selling conspiracy theories.
The Internet's most popular conspiracy theory discussion board. ATS Mix. From AboveTopSecret.com.
In the name of Christ, just let us in!
Starts now.
With all the numerous people that we've had a chance to talk to and interview at the UFO Expo, this gentleman that we're getting ready to bring up for our interview is certainly one of the most interesting ones because he actually has some proof, some physical proof to back the research that he is doing, and we are talking about Dr. Roger Lear. Now, if some of you don't know anything about Dr. Roger Lear, he is a podiatrist, a foot doctor, and he got involved with the removal of objects that for some reason have weird structure to them.
Right.
That seem to go against the grain, so to speak, if you will, of anything else that is earthly. And he's a fascinating man. And in our conversations with him and in our interview, we had told him that the whole story about how Dave and I got involved with ATS and they wanted a couple of clowns. And of course, who else to pick but Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. And so he was laughing. He thought that was great. He thought that the community, the UFO community, needed more humor, that we have a tendency to be a little too stressed out about it, too serious. So he was all for that. So we did our interview. It worked out great. Then we came to the end of the interview. And then what happened, Dave?
At the end of the interview, he grabs my arm. This is after we have the recorders off. Grabs my arm, asks me if I've been burned before. I say no. Then he starts feeling around this one place of my arm. And, John, you were witness to this. And Johnny, of course, I'm looking over at Johnny, and Johnny's starting to smile because keep in mind that we've already did a prelim with him that, you know, all the fun and stuff. And we had a lot of fun during the interview. So we're thinking he's pulling one over on us now.
Right.
And he's saying, you know, I feel something in your arm. And I'm thinking to myself, yeah, right. But because of my respect for Dr. Lear, I'm not going that way. I say, oh, really? You know, and he's going on. And then it starts dawning on me after he's doing this 1 minute examination, 2 minute examination of my arm, that he's dead serious, John.
Yeah. Yeah.
He and was. You and I both go, wait a minute. You're serious. He goes, of course I'm serious. So we then start the recorders again, and that's what's really amazing about this. There's something, that, and Johnny and I have both felt it. There is something in my arm that is hard. It's not like a flesh. It's not like a vein or whatever. But there's something in my arm, and because I have seen UFOs back when I was 5, he asked me that if it was an extended encounter. I said, yeah, you know, by 10-15 minutes maybe, over Dallas back in 1953-54. He said, well, you know that people that have seen extended views of UFOs have the tremendous possibility of being captured and taken.
For some reason, the percentage of people that are abducted or experimented on are is much greater for the length of time that they supposedly see a UFO.
Right, yeah. So anyway, that was what I thought was amazing. This guy, to me, was really a hugely fun and informative interview, John.
Absolutely. And so without any further ado, my friends, here is our interview at the Bay Area UFO Expo with Dr. Roger Lear.
ATS Mix.
Yeah, listen up.
From Above Top Secret.
Jesus Christ.
.com. Featured interview.
Well, Dave, this is something I wanted to do from day one. You know this because I said,
I know this.
If I do anything, I got to track down Dr. Roger Lear.
I love that guy.
Yeah, and you should. And normally, Dr. Lear, we don't pay him to say anything with such great accolades like that. And in this case, he's being completely honest.
Okay, I usually get paid.
Oh, do you get paid? Well, that's good.
Well, you're in trouble with this interview.
Yes, well, we'll have him contact.
Oh, he can give you some ATS points.
There you go.
I love that.
You know, I like points.
They're good at generally those coffee shops. I won't say star whatever.
Yes.
The star clocks.
That's good.
The reason why I wanted to interview you is because you are actually one of the few gentlemen who has had the opportunity to get in depth with a subject that is very near and dear to me, and that is the actual removal of alien implants. And so I'd like to possibly have you share with our members and our listeners. We have millions of listeners
We have millions of listeners.
We have millions of listeners. We've got...
And with that, Dave will attempt it again at another date. We're all tired, by the way, listeners, and so it is late in the day, and we do appreciate you taking time out of your busy schedule to talk with us, sir. Could you tell our listeners how you actually got involved into delving a little deeper with alien implants and the removal of them?
Well, since the inception of what I do, a lot of things have come through my life as synchronicities, one upon the other. And I actually started out in the alien implant field as the probably the world's worst consummate scientific skeptic. Yeah, set out to prove that this was the biggest bag of nonsense that I've ever heard of in my life.
Okay.
So at the time, I was attending a UFO conference in the capacity of an investigative reporter reporting for a periodical from MUFON called The Vortex.
Okay.
And I was introduced to a UFO abduction investigator who presented some x-rays in which he claimed the objects in the x-rays were alien implants.
I love live radio.
Boy.
It's great.
That's scary.
Yes. Maybe that was some...
It happened!
But anyway, in my viewing the x-rays, to me, I thought that these looked like leftover from a previous foot surgery, since the x-rays I was looking at were of a foot. And when you do repairs of fractures and other traumatic sites, sometimes we put people back together with wire and screws and pins and so on.
Sure.
And these look like little leftovers maybe from a previous foot surgery. So I said, well, when did she have her foot surgery done?
Right.
And he said, well, as far as I know, there's never been any foot surgery. And I looked at him challengingly and said, can you prove it? And with that, and a great surprise, he reached into a big bag like a pilot's suitcase and pulled out a stack of medical records and put them on the counter and said, well, here's your medical records since childhood.
Wow.
So I said, well, I have no way of looking at them here. I said, if you don't mind and would trust me, I'll take them to the room and I'll look at them.
Sure.
So he said, sure. He handed me all the data, and I took it to the room that night, and I went through them, and there was no evidence of a foot surgery ever being performed. And so I went back the next day, still as doubtful as I was the day before, and I said, well, very simply, if you think these are some extraordinary object, why don't you take them out and see what they are? And he said, well, I think that she would like to have that done, but she doesn't have any money and doesn't have any medical insurance. And I said, well, where does she live? And then he said, in Texas. I said, well, my office is here in California. I said, if you get her to my office, I'll do the surgery free.
No.
Oh, well, he said, that you really mean that? I said, yeah, I do. So he said, okay. He says, I think that can be handled. So about 3 weeks later, I got a telephone call, and he said that he could get her here to California, and was there a possibility of doing another case? And I said, well, what do you got in this case? And he said, well, it's a case with a fellow that has an object in the hand. And I said, well, I don't do hand surgeries, but, you know, I could probably get a general surgeon to do it. I said, send me the x-rays. So he sent me the x-rays, and I took them to a radiologist, and the radiologist says, yeah, there's a metallic foreign body in the hand. So I said, okay, we'll do the surgery. So about a month and a half after that, we did the first two cases. Again, as a consummate skeptic, I don't care whether it was 20 cases. I mean, you know, I was convinced of UFOs since I was about 10, 11 years old.
Right.
So I remember my father bringing in the San Francisco Examiner and throwing it on the table and reading the headline, U.S. Army Air Force captures flying saucer. So, but there's a big stretch,
sure,
between the existence of some extraterrestrial life visiting this planet, abductions, and then finally implants. I just couldn't get with that. So we did the first surgeries in August of 1995, and right from the beginning, there were things that began to happen that were rather strange. And we proceeded from there. So that's how I got involved.
Interesting.
Dr. Lear, let me ask you a question. What did you think when you found an implant? I mean, what was your first thought when you realized that obviously it wasn't something that would have been put in by the medical community or whatever?
Well, the first thing that I noticed and looked for specifically, if there was any portal of entry, you know, if there was a scar or someplace where this thing went in at, and I didn't find anything, and we looked with a loop and found no portal of entry. The second thing was when we finally got a hold of this thing and removed it, it was the weirdest looking thing I've seen. And of course, by that time, I'd taken literally thousands of things out. I used to do a lot of trauma surgery. And this thing was so weird looking. It was a T or a delta looking object. And it was obviously metal, which I thought was all one piece, covered with the weirdest looking biological coating that I've ever seen in my life. It was dark gray and not fibrous. It was like a smooth skin. And we wanted to see, you know, what in the heck was inside, so we took a scalpel blade and tried to open it. We couldn't cut it open.
Really?
Really. So for the sake of good medical practice, I mean, you can't leave a patient with a wound open on the table while you're fiddling doing something else, so we just set it aside. Now, she had one on the opposite side of the toe as well. So we just went ahead and we took that out, and that looked totally different. That was a little cantaloupe seed looking affair, but it had the same crazy looking tissue around it, and we couldn't cut through that one either. And the general surgeon had never seen anything like that.
Right.
So there was two, you know, I would say, experienced people. So then we went ahead and we did the second case, which was the hand case, and we removed an object that looked exactly like what we had moved from the first case, this little cantaloupe seed thing, and it was, again, covered with a strange coating. Two different people, never met each other, were on different planes, came to California, they were both from Texas, from different parts of Texas. No familial relationship, as I said, and no direct relationship between them at all, except for the fact that they met on the way to having this surgical extraction done. So, I mean, that in itself was a bit unusual.
Sure. Now, is there, and I'm sure you folks did this, but was there any testing done to it to see what kind of atomic structure it had or where it was in the element scale? Or,
well, you have to remember that when we started doing this, number one, the motive was to prove that this was nonsense, and then all of a sudden we wind up with some strange anomalies.
Sure.
One happened during the surgery. It was done under a local anesthetic and a hypno-anesthesia to boot because the patient was nervous. So when we went in and made the initial incision, everything was going along fine, and I used enough anesthetic to anesthetize your leg, more or less a toe.
Right.
And when we touched the object, she came out of the hypno-anesthetic state and just jerked her foot off the table screaming in pain. And I thought, you know, this is a bit of a surprise. So
Right. We
put her back down and gave her some more anesthetic. We were able to get through the surgery. But these things, over a period of years, I'd never seen anything like that before. So I came to the conclusion maybe we're dealing with something here that's attached to a nerve trunk that's not getting anesthesia. Well, that was strange, and then not being able to cut the object open to look inside, I thought that was strange. And so I didn't expect to be spending any money or to go any farther with this. I figured we'll just send the thing into pathology like I had done over the past 20-some-odd years, and we'll find out what it is and get a report back. So instead, what we did was we removed some tissue that surrounded the object, and we sent that in. and left this cocoon on the metal. And the first report I got back was from the pathologist showing me that the surrounding tissue had no elements of inflammation. There was no infiltration of inflammatory tissue or mast cells or other things that we see during the inflammatory process.
And I don't have any medical knowledge at all, but there should have been some type of foreign residue around the area.
There should be something. There's two inflammatory responses that you get when you get an object in the body. One is an acute inflammatory response, such as if you got a sliver or something in your
festering
finger.
Or whatever.
It's going to fester.
Right.
You get some pus and the body shoves
it
out. And
right.
It's a done deal. Or if you're flying in a war or combat and you get shrapnel in you and you can't take it out or you don't want it taken out, and it stays there for years and everybody seems to be happy as a clam with it, then it's because if you surgically extracted it, you would see it surrounded in a large fibrous mass called a fibrous inclusion cyst, and that sort of walls it off from the rest of the body. There's still low-grade inflammation going on, but not enough to bother the person. So you have either acute or you have chronic,
right.
But it is impossible to have zero.
And that's what this was.
And that's what this was.
And that's why the body was not rejecting it or doing anything with it at all.
Exactly.
Wow.
So that was a bit of a surprise. And the second surprise was there was a large amount of specialized nerve endings in the area called proprioceptors. And you don't have proprioceptors. They're not politically correct for the area. They're not supposed to be there. There's no reason for them to be there. But in both three areas, we're talking about two patients, they had a large amount of nerve endings.
Now, at any time, did the outside of, I'm assuming that you could feel it under the skin.
No, couldn't feel a thing.
Could not feel a thing.
Now, the gentleman that had the one in the hand, in fact, used to enjoy amazing his friends by taking a stud finder and running it over his hand and having the peg stand straight up when he got to the spot. Say, well, look what I could do.
So does that mean that it had some form of metallic or magnetic properties to it?
Yeah, you would assume that from a simple stud finder, at least it had iron in it.
Right.
Because, you know, if you use a stud finder to find a nail on a wall, I'm not talking about a complex electronic device that they have today, which will not only detect the nail, but will also detect the stud. This is a regular old-fashioned stud finder where, you know, it was a piece of plastic with a magnetic rod in it. When it got over a piece of metal, it would just stand straight up.
Right. Had there ever been any tests done with possible radio frequency transmissions or affecting electronics?
No, nothing was ever done with either one of these individuals. And as I said, when we started out, we didn't expect to find anything. We didn't even have an X-ray device there in the operating room to make this surgery a lot easier.
Sure.
We just went in blind, and it took an hour and a half per side to even locate the object and get it out.
Wow.
So, okay, then that leads me to another question, Dr. Lehrer. If I understand correctly, these implants are not just like the X-Files, where they're always in the back of the neck. You found implants in feet, hands, virtually all parts of the anatomy. So, I mean, being a doctor, I mean, does that give any significance to you? I mean, obviously, you weren't the one that implanted them, so you would have not known the agenda. But it would seem logical to me that if it was a singular type, whatever, entity, whatever, that they would have the same procedures that we do in medicine, to where you do things a certain way. How do you explain all the different parts of the body that the implants are going into?
Well, the one commonality I find in location is that they're all put in places where they're quick and easy to put in.
Regardless of, it's noticed as a limb, pretty much.
Well, we found one in the jaw near the bone, the ones in the hand near the bone, one in the arm near the bone, you know, two or three from feet, legs, all easy places. So if you were going to, I mean, using human, terrestrial logic, if you were going to implant a whole bunch of people, like a few million, structure on the Earth,
right.
Not necessarily entire abductee population,
but
let's say 15%. And in order to calculate the mathematics and manpower and ships that it would take to do this, you would want to do it quick. So all these reports I hear of people something in the abdomen or the chest or the intestinal tract, never seen any, none. They're all in places where wherever you get it in quick, say goodbye, go back home, go to do drive or whatever you were doing. And that's another thing that I want to state categorically, that over 60% of abductions do not occur during at night when the person is in bed. It has absolutely nothing to do with hypnagogic sleep, sleep paralysis, or magnetic fields.
Right.
Most abductees are taken during times when they're doing something else, when they're fully awake, and then an attempt is made to return them to that same position. And they're not always that accurate, and they're not always successful.
Right,
and there's
right.
a large number of cases in which the person, the client, the human is injured
right.
in the process.
Now, did any of these patients experience like missing time during these episodes? Or?
Yes, they're mostly classic abduction stories. Now, one of the things that we decided to do, and only for the reason that we tried to do this as a scientific study so that perhaps someday we could get peer-reviewed science literature to look at it, was to eliminate any factors that would raise an eyebrow or cause questions in the academic scientific community. So we didn't allow anybody to undergo any kind of hypnotic regression prior to the time the procedures were performed. Once they were performed, then if the patient wanted to undergo a regression, we would send them to an experienced person like Bud Hopkins or other people who
right.
do that kind of thing.
Sure.
And you got to remember that from my point of view, I'm really less interested in the story of what happened during their experience. I mean, it's interesting to hear them all,
sure,
but
right.
my emphasis is on what happened in relation to physical evidence
right.
that anything happened, which nobody bothers to look at.
Right.
If it's a person is being abducted from their home, most investigators will look at the subject to
right.
which the abduction is going on. But how about the rest of the house? Is there any changes in the metal? Are nails backing out of the walls?
Right.
Is there electromagnetic effects? I mean, you have, and I had one case that we went into in depth with a large amount of physical evidence that was non-surgical.
Really? I would like to remind our listeners right now, because I think I didn't get a chance to. I did ask off air, but I'll do this now while our listeners are hearing this interview. If you would like to, you could go visit Dr. Lear's site, and that is at www.alienscalpel.com. And I believe that's correct. Is that
right? Is absolutely
correct. And I would also like to invoke this plea to our listeners and also our members alike that Dr. Lear's research that he does, if I recall correctly what I read, is mostly out of pocket by yourself, and you have limited funding, if any at all, and any gifts, donations would be gladly accepted, and they can get more information by going to your website. Is that not
again
correct?
Absolutely correct. We have a 501c3 nonprofit organization called ANS Research. All donations are tax deductible, and as long as we have the information and somebody wants to make a contribution, we'll be happy to send them a tax deductible form that they can give to their account.
Fantastic. Now, I know you've got a busy schedule. We're going to let you go, but before we let you go, sir, there is one specific case, of course, that I have to ask about, or else our members and listeners would be killing me.
They would be very upset.
Yeah, very upset.
They would be you two ewing us.
That's right. And there is
we hate those.
That's right. There is an infamous case of a procedure that you were doing with a movement of an object while under the operation. And if you could tell our listeners about that, that'd be great.
Well, that is probably the strangest of all the procedures that I've done so far for this field. It was a lady, middle-aged lady, who was a professional stewardess for one of the major airlines, and she had one conscious experience some years prior to the time I met her. She was with her intended. They were sleeping, and about 3 o'clock in the morning, she awoke and there was a brilliant, bright, bluish-white light coming in the window, and she thought somebody was shining a spotlight in the window, or it was a helicopter or something, so she tried to awaken her better half and couldn't wake him up. It just wouldn't wake up, so she got out of bed to go look out the window, and that's the last thing that she remembered. She didn't remember anything after that, and she wound up back in bed again, and in the morning he was gone.
Wow.
So when she became awake, she thought that she had the flu because she had muscle aches and pains and nausea, and was extremely thirsty. She ran into the bathroom and just put her hands under the sink of water and just gulped down water, and then just felt like she had the flu, all the symptoms of the flu, and went back to get bed again. And she called the airline and told them that she was ill and she wouldn't be able to come in.
Right.
And then she stayed in bed for several hours, got back up, and she went in to take a shower. And when she looked down at her left arm, she saw a marble-sized lump that was not there the night before. And she thought to herself, oh my gosh, where did that come from? So she was, soaping up and cleaning, and she reached over and she touched the lump and it moved. And she nearly passed out, from the shock. Well, it took her quite a few years before she had contacted me. This was back east, and someone had taken her to one of my presentations, and she sat through about 15 minutes of it, became extremely depressed and irritated, and insisted on leaving, so she got up and left. Years later, she had moved to California, and I was doing a presentation locally for MUFON, Ventura Santa Barbara County. And she came in and introduced herself and said that she might have an implant and so on. But she didn't show me anything. She didn't give me anything. She said, can I contact you in your office? And I said, yes. And I gave her my office number. Then about another 3 months went by. And she called, and I told my secretary to put the call through, as I recalled who she was. And she made an appointment, came in, and she told me on the phone that she had an object that moved when it was touched. And again, I thought, well, this is, this is a lady who's having hallucinations, or she has a cyst or something.
Sure.
So I had her come in, and I took a history on her. We do kind of a dual history, medical history, and then an abduction history. Then I said, okay, let me look at the object. So she shows, she had a very thin arm. She shows me her arm, and here's this marble-sized lump in her arm. And I said, so you think that moves, huh? And she says, yeah. She goes over and touches it, and it moves out of the way.
And you saw this?
I saw it. So I said, well, let me take a look. And so I examined her arm. I said, did you ever have an infection, injury, da 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 da? And she said, no. I said, do you have any scars on your arm? No. I looked all over. I didn't see anything. So I took and touched it, and it moved for me. Well, when you're medical have medical training, and your mind is in that vein,
sure,
you try and think of a logical reason.
Absolutely.
So the logical reason to me was this was a cyst, and sometimes when people develop cysts, there's a sinus tract that develops underneath the skin. And so if you have a cyst, an infection occurred, its infection subsided, maybe this thing can move through this sinus tract. So that was, on my mind. So what I did was I put my finger where it was, and then I was going to touch it, and of course it would move back to the same spot if I was correct. So, I touched it with this finger, and instead of going back to the same spot, it went in another direction. Well, again, that's the workings of the human mind. Say, okay, she's got two sinus tracts, and I've got five fingers.
There you go.
So I put one here.
The odds are in my favor,
yeah,
right?
Put one here, put one finger there, touch it over here, move to a third spot. And anyway, to make a long story short, it would move in a circle of about 2.5 to 3 inch diameter anywhere. And then it got weirder after that, because after playing with it, for the lack of a better word, if it was here and I put my finger here, it would move towards my finger. And I've got all the video of this, and how I move my finger around just keeps following me.
Wow.
So talk about weird stuff.
Yeah. So what happened?
Well, we eventually, through a set of interesting circumstances, she already had an appointment to have this removed in a motion picture hospital. And
In a motion picture hospital?
Yes, she later on had married somebody in the motion picture business, was covered by motion picture.
Oh, okay, okay. I thought maybe it was just, we want to get this on documentary or whatever.
No.
Okay, got it.
So, again, through a set of very strange circumstances, I asked her if I could be there and film it and maybe have it. It all fell through like a ton of bricks, and she was leaving on a flight in 3 days. And I said, if I can arrange to have this done, I said, would you have it done? And she thought about it, and she said, yes. So I canceled the rest of my day, ran back to the office, got on the phone, and set all this up in one day.
Wow.
To do the day after next. And it was done. So what we did essentially was we removed an object that was about the size of a large pea. It was yellow in color, extremely yellow. And it had some, it looked very smooth and had some lines that moved, that were coursed the sides of this thing, like wires or blood vessels or nerves or something, but they kind of stood out. And the object was bivalve. It was, I did this on a show and I got all kinds of hell for it because somebody, I said it was bivalve like a clam.
Right.
And they took the context out of it and said, oh, Dr. Lear said he removed a clam from this person's arm.
well, set the record straight
no, it
here.
It was bivalve, okay. like a mollusk, like a clam.
All right.
It opened from a point like so and could open and close.
I have one last quick question.
Okay. Well, I have another question, too.
Oh, okay. Then we have two last-minute quick questions. Mine is very fast. Of all the implants that you took, I have heard so many things this weekend that are color associated, okay? And you mentioned about it being yellow in color, I think.
Mm-hmm.
On the other implants, were they all of a similar shade of color, or were they different colors?
Well, that's a good question. I've done 13 cases now, and we've kind of put them in categories. We have three that are little whitish balls about the size of a BB, and they're usually attached to some kind of a skin lesion, and that's a non-metallic category because they are non-metallic. They look like they're made out of calcium, but there's no calcium in them. The second group is metallic and covered with this grayish membrane that I told you about, and we have only one that's totally biological, and that's the yellow one.
Wow.
And wow,
that's pretty interesting. My last question.
May I just do one thing?
You want a sidebar?
No, not sidebar. Would you please say one more time about what an intelligent question that was?
That was a very good, intelligent question.
Thank you, Dr. Lear.
Dave.
Okay, please. I pass the witness.
All right. My last question is this: in all the patients that you have removed implants from, have they been able to continue going on with an everyday life, or has there been any type of repercussions with the removal of the implant?
Well, that's another good, intelligent question.
Oh, great.
Thank you.
No, you had to prove me wrong, didn't you?
We do follow up the patients, and we had one case in which they said they had some psychic ability, and following the surgery, it was gone. But then again, within a couple of months, it returned. So basically, the fact of the matter is that we have all the patients examined by a psychologist prior and then after the surgery. Two told the psychologist they had a newfound feeling of freedom. I asked, is this because the apprehension from having the surgery is done? And she said, no, it means something else. So I don't know what.
So it wasn't psychosomatic.
No. So it's outside of that, everybody is happy as a clam. Nobody has had, as far as I know, anything implanted. If they were undergoing continuous abductions, they're still undergoing it. If it had stopped some years prior, none ever started again. So everything was as it was before, except if they had pain, the pain's gone.
Fantastic. I'd like to remind our listeners and members again that Dr. Lear's website is www.alienscalpel.com, and we would like to encourage you all to please, if you would, to go visit his site. And also, if you would, please, also feel free to donate to this cause and his research so that we can get more information about this. Dr. Lear, thank you so much for joining us and taking time out of your busy schedule.
We appreciate it, Dr. Lear.
My
really
pleasure.
Appreciate it, sir.
What an absolute great interview. And may I say how much I respect your abilities to convey the things in such an intelligent manner, because I have a co-host that is college educated, and sometimes he has problems with big words. I, on the other hand, am only a high school educated child, and that's why I wanted you to repeat. It was a very intelligent question.
Very intelligent, yes, sir.
Thanks again, Dr. Lear. We really appreciate it, sir.
My pleasure.
A lot of fun.
My pleasure.
All right, well, we have an update here.
You need to talk, telling us.
All right, we have an update, folks. We just got through completing our interview with Dr. Roger Lear, and after we shook hands and we thought that was the end, Dr. Lear asked to look at my co-host's arm. And I'm going to have you stretch out your arm one more time. And Dr. Lear, would you one more time just explain what it is that you thought you may have seen here and what drew your attention to it?
Well, Dave had his arm in a certain position where the skin was relatively loose, leaning on the table, and I saw a kind of an angular depression with a kind of a red mark around it. So, of course, your first line of concern is normal terrestrial medical things like normal skin lesions and psoriasis and so on, but he denies all these things. And then come to find out, when he was 5 years old, he states he has had a prolonged sighting of a UFO. So, who knows?
Wow. And you folks want to know why I'm nuts.
well, we'll have to check that out further.
Yeah, if you're interested, you can go have an x-ray taken.
Would it have shown up with any x-ray that I ever took, Dr. Lear?
Yeah, if it wasn't a really...
I had a recently CT scan.
It might so
would it be,
show
would
up.
Would it show up on the CT
the
scan?
Arm?
My whole body. They did that trying to get... I had a cough that I was trying to get rid of. So would a CT scan show that? Because they did my arms, they did my chest?
Yeah, sometimes it will. But you have to look for it first.
I'm going to take those
suckers out. And if... And here again, I don't know what I would be looking for, but in Dave's case, if he were looking at the x-rays or the scan, what exactly would he be looking for? A dark object? A whitish object?
If it's an x-ray or a CT scan, it's going to be a bright object.
A bright object,
like a reflective surface or something.
Yeah, because the same technology is in an x-ray is the same as in a CT. And, of course, if you have CT with contrast, which you wouldn't use in the arm, but you would use it in the rest of your body.
Exactly, exactly.
It's a little different. But, you're going to see bones and joints. That's what I'm saying. If it's an ordinary x-ray and you take a dark x-ray, of your,
where is it that you're seeing
your elbow?
The area that you're. And obviously, I know I'm taut now as opposed to.
Yeah, the skin is taut, but if you feel here, there's a little lump.
I do feel it.
Yeah, and that when you're.
Wouldn't it be weird? We're doing this interview with Dr. Lear, and I find out that not only may I. What's the other side of it?
Oh, your elbow looks about the same. So I don't know what you're
saying. I just noticed this roughness area.
Yeah.
A little rough area.
Well,
I thought maybe it was just because my skin was dry or whatever. But this is dry skin, in other words.
That's a depression. You can see the line
right
here. Oh, here
it is. Okay. Yes.
And when the skin is loose.
Is it weird?
Yeah, it was very. And
by the way, this is not a bit.
Yeah, this is not a bit. In fact, I was just going to say, when you first leaned over to look at it, I thought you were going to play a little joke on my co-host, Dave, and I was going to play along, obviously.
I can feel this.
But
this
now,
is not a bit.
This is not a bit.
Can you feel this? I feel it right here. Feel it. So yeah. I can feel a knot.
Yeah, there's a lump there. And then you have this adjoining depression.
Oh, my God.
I don't think that has anything to do with the rough skin, but
right.
You might try a little 1% hydrocortisone cream, see if that goes away.
Ah, okay. I'm going to go back when I get back to Dallas, and I'm going to pull those CT scans out, doctor.
Yeah, that might
well, listen, we can't thank you for your time.
And as I said, if you don't see anything on the CT scan, you can go in to your local friendly chiropractor and get an x-ray taken.
Okay.
Right. Just tell them to take a light view.
Okay.
Okay.
They're not interested in your bones or joints.
Oh, sure. All right, doctor, I can't thank you enough. I especially enjoyed the... I'm not going there.
Hey, welcome, buddy. Welcome.
Hey, thanks. I have officially arrived in the UFO community, Dr. Lear.
Okay.
Thank you so much. My pleasure. Thank
you. We appreciate your time, sir. Thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Yeah, thank you.
ATS Mix from AboveTopSecret.com is over.
You've been listening to the ATS Mix with Dave Rabbit and Johnny Anonymous. If you have a comment, suggestion, an opposing view, or would like to participate in a future show of ATS Mix, please contact Dave or Johnny at www.abovetopsecret.com. The views expressed on ATS Mix do not necessarily reflect those of the staff and management of the Above Network, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Thanks for listening. You may now reattach your tinfoil hat. Thank you.